Chapter 19. Idris. Solis settled them 2 meters into the trees, where they could get a glimpse of the Ankertown trail from cover. Chris was plainly unhappy being even that far in. After all, they'd seen Jerrican trees in action. Idris himself was strangely calm. He didn't feel he had some magic rapport with the planet's unpleasant ecology, and one abortive groppler attack didn't make him the arch-druid of Jericho. He knew they were very close to the buried avenue he'd felt stretching from Gold City to the next originator site, and was really hoping the originator construction would keep away the nastier predators. He might be wrong, though, which might make them dead. What Trine thought of this development was anyone's guess. They'd turned their face off, so its glimmer wouldn't give away their position. The sound of oncoming engines had grown steadily louder in fits and starts. It sounded to Idris as though the vehicles were trying to make best speed, but falling foul of the vegetation. He could distantly hear a shouted argument. Maybe the bad guys were more concerned with each other than a potential ambush. He had lost sight of Solis completely. Then, 3 vehicles came into view along the trail, 2 open-cabined cars on balloon tyres and a big enclosed truck behind them. The lead vehicle had 4 men hanging onto it. The second had traded half its crew for a significant toothy gash in its flank, suggesting some manner of groppler had put the vehicle on the menu. The men seemed a mix of local mercenaries and Voyenni thugs. Idris had assumed that Solis would pull some kind of highwayman stunt. She'd step out, point Mr. Punch in their direction, and they'd surrender in the face of her sheer panache. Instead, she opened by just shooting up the lead vehicle and its occupants. She still had the accelerator set for chainshot, and it made a hell of a mess of the car's hull, tearing through metal and plastic, and just about slicing both engine and driver in half. The rear end of their vehicle flipped over the front and hit the dirt. The 2 Voyenni who'd been reclining back there were flung forwards, which put them out of Solis's eyeline and likely saved their lives. The 2nd vehicle, damaged as it was going slowly enough to steer clear of the wreck, and its crew jumped and hit the ground running. Solis began pot-shotting at them from the trees, individual pellets punching clean through the skewed car they were trying to hide behind. Then men began to pile from the big vehicle at the back. There were at least 6 in the first wave, and they started shooting into the trees indiscriminately. Idris kept low, glancing back to check that the others were doing the same. Trine was crouching, with their humanoid legs uncomfortably akimbo, chest close to the ground and propped up on their arms. The local mercs had projectile launchers and beanbag guns, but the Voyenni had magnetics and a couple of true accelerators. They would cut through Solis's armour as easily as flesh. Even as a particularly savage salvo shredded the native life over Idris's head, Solis was suddenly kneeling by him. "Come on," she said, "fall back." "But we can't," Chris objected. "The dig crew." "Not to the dig, not yet. We'll go further in. Hope we lose them. Come on." Solis gestured emphatically, then raised Mr. Punch again. As Idris scrambled in the direction she'd indicated, he heard the weapon's high, ringing voice toll 3 times. He hauled himself over a rise, slipped, and rolled helplessly down the other side until Chris caught him.
"Ow!"
"I was concerned that I would be the most inept fugitive here, old comrade," Trine observed acidly. "Thank you for sparing me that."
Despite their limp, they were keeping pace well enough. Solis slung herself back over the ridge towards them, turning to send another few shots back towards the pursuers. As soon as the pellets had left Mr. Punch, she was already moving. She dropped into the cover of the ridge before the answering salvo could shred the leathery foliage where she'd been. Then, They were stumbling deeper into the forest, squeezing between close-grown trees, tripping over roots that twitched and writhed beneath them. Not trees, remember? Just monsters who've got a good tree thing going on right now. He hoped the Voyeni ran into some trees that were considering an aggressive change of lifestyle. He heard shouts behind them. Solis turned and sent a handful of shot back that way and shoved him onwards. Disappointed, he panted over his shoulder, with the Parthenon war machine. Aren't you supposed to be as good as 100 colonials or something? He couldn't see the expression behind her visor. Low on ammo, she said curtly. Or that chain shot. Don't want to get down to fists. A moment later, and he thought he'd lost track of Chris and Trine entirely. But it was him going off course. Solis had to snag his arm and haul him back on track. Then Chris yelled out a warning, and there was gunfire dead ahead, wickering through the crowded spaces between trunks and hacking out explosive splinters of not-quite-wood. Solis forged past, and he saw two scars appear on her armour, the force of the impact sending her stumbling left. Just projectile shot, nothing that would cut through her protection, but worse could come next. Go, she ordered the three of them. Go, keep going, I'll catch up. Chris looked rebellious, but she had literally brought a knife to a gunfight, and it wasn't enough. Another yell from Solis sent them plunging deeper into the jungle, struggling up a rise using twisting roots as a ladder, and startling a pack of metre-long hopping things. The air whined with tiny specks of life, swarming in glittering helices wherever the sunlight broke through the canopy. And all around them, the locals were ramping it up, a cacophony of clattering and booming, as various monsters registered their displeasure. Idris, where are you going? Chris shouted, and he realised he'd just gone off again. He'd veered to the top of a rise, stubbled with trees standing out like hairs on a fright wig. He slithered halfway back down, whacking his knee hard on a trunk he swore had lurched into his path. This damned planet! Chris and Trine were waiting for him. From somewhere behind, he heard a scream, and then sobbing. A man's voice, not Solis.
My old acquaintance, my fellow veteran, would you just not?
Trine demanded testily. They had abandoned an upright posture entirely for the rough going, using all their arms to skitter about, legs arched high like a grasshopper's. And then Idris's lips moved, and he said, This way. The words came from the part of him he wasn't quite on speaking terms with, the same part that knew Unspace and had touched the mind of a destructive god.
What?
Chris looked up the rise. No way! We need to stay low. His mind filled with attempts at explanation, but he didn't have the words and they didn't have the time.
Just this way.
And then he was off, trusting that she'd follow him and Trine wouldn't want to be left alone, trusting that Solis would find them. Trusting himself, which was a hard thing to do at the best of times.
Ints go mad. Everyone knows that.
And nobody knew it better than an Int. When Idris reached the top of the next rise, he risked a look back and saw movement below. Solis had spotted them and was running their way, pausing for a moment to send a single shot back, then picking up the pace again. Off to her right, a sudden fit shook a couple of the trees as return fire lashed at them. Then he was scrabbling past the rise and running too, flat out running over the treacherous ground, Chris and Trine following behind him. Something had a hook in his mind, and he battered through the clutching foliage, bounced off spiny trunks, and fell headlong. He wrenched himself up from roots that tried to find out what he was made of and whether they could eat it. It'll be real funny if there's just a monster at the end of this with its mouth open waiting for me. Hilarious. Then he saw a shadow through the trees, huge and grey. For a moment, he thought it really was a monster, but he was pelting headlong, too fast to put the brakes on. He ended up slamming into a rough, overgrown wall and sitting down hard. Beside him, Trine scuttled to a halt, with Chris a dozen paces behind and gasping for breath.
"What have you found?" Trine's clipped voice issued from their torso. "Menhir Telemiae, you creature of remarkable surprises. What's this?"
"Defence," he got out. "Walls."
And then Solace was coming, virtually scooping up Chris on her way. It was an originator site, just a single structure, but it was tall, not just buried foundations. It reminded Idris of the abandoned shell of some marine mollusk. He could make out three concentric sets of walls with random holes in them, ending in jagged rock teeth about 3 meters up. The jungle had overcome its originator squeamishness here, and trees had grown up close to the walls. Vines snaked over their pitted substance, as though questing for meaning.
"This'll do," Solace decided. "In!" "The scientist in me," remarked Trine, "protests against using a once-in-a-lifetime discovery as a defence against gunfire. But not too much."
And they were hurrying themselves inside, even as they said it. Solace found a breach in the wall at around the right height and was ready when the first of their pursuers could be glimpsed through the trees. She sent off three pellets, one after another, the retorts hanging in the air.
"How many of them left?" Chris asked.
"At least 7,
Solace sighted, but didn't shoot.
"You hear a ship out there?"
"Not yet. And even if Ollie can get the Joan down here through the EM, she'd go for the dig site."
"We can find some way to signal her. We can set fire to the jungle." "Jerrican substances don't burn, my friend. They desiccate without even smoke," Trine remarked.
"This planet really is good for absolutely nothing," Solace growled. She sent out one more shot and was rewarded by some alarmed shouting.
"Well, they have us pinned here. The walls are good, but not a permanent solution."
"Wait. Listen,"
Chris was saying. To Idris, it seemed as though she was receding. Not physically, but along some other axis entirely. They all were. Which meant, of course, it was him, not them. Something to do with the structure around them was screwing with his head, expanding his consciousness, and he wasn't comfortable with that at all. He sat down, backsliding down the abrasive structure of the wall, ripping up his tunic. None of the others noticed.
"Is that the Joan now?" Chris was saying. "I wish all these fucking monsters would shut up for a second."
They shut up. Idris whimpered. Because he'd done that. Not intentionally. But Chris's demand had passed through his brain, into the building around them, and then out into the world. He'd somehow turned it into a shout, and every single bloody denizen of this monstrous jungle had stopped in mid-croak, mid-bellow, mid-shrill, because it wanted to know what he was, and precisely how edible. Chris started. But the Voyenni had taken the quiet as the cue for an attack. In response, they were now rushing through the last few meters of tree cover, shooting as they came. Solace drilled one through the head, then dropped Mr. Punch, because a big Voyenni had surprised them. He ducked around the wall with a magnetic pistol raised before him. Solace went for the barrel, twisting it from his hand with servo-enhanced strength. He picked her up and slammed her against the wall. He was tall and broad enough that she looked like a toy in his grip. Then she rammed an armoured knee into his sternum and chopped at his neck with the blade of her hand.
He dropped her. But another man was behind him, then another. Idris stared down the barrel of a massive projectile gun and literally couldn't move. His body was frozen with fear, his mind away with a multitude of horrible alien fairies. Chris knifed the gunman in the hand, and the gun went off, bullet ricocheting back and forth within the walls before spanging off Trine's body, its momentum almost spent. Then the knifed Voyeni had his own blade out, something closer to a machete, and hacked murderously down at Chris. She dodged in the limited space, feinting at his face to keep him back. Idris felt as though he was watching a media type of unlikely events, things that had happened to someone else. His mind was filled with a thousand living things, linked through the broken tower to the whole electromagnetic life of the jungle. The jungle was like a brain, he thought, but a brain at war with itself, fighting for dominance, neuron against neuron. Feels like my brain, then. This forested brain wouldn't do what he wanted, though. It had its own business, after all. Except, this tower was something like a transmitter station. Not in any way the operator back at Anchortown would have recognised, but it had been raised to boost and send signals. And right now, the only signal was him. Perhaps there were ways that his wishes and the drives of the biosphere outside might coincide. Hold them off, he tried to say to it, but knew that no words had escaped his clamped tight jaws. Solis had sent her opponent into Chris's Voyeni, then swept the pair of them out of the entryway. They were coming right back in with reinforcements, but she was keeping them out. Idris could only wonder at the economy of her movements. The Voyeni were trained thugs, the products of expensive schools in brutality and intimidation. Solis had been engineered as a soldier, mind and body. She was also encased in top-flight Partheni armour and trained from childhood to fight. There were too many of them for her to go on the offensive, but she was holding. Holding. Someone howled outside, a human voice, in mortal terror. Idris felt vomit rise in his throat, because in some way he was outside too, breeding that terror. It was his fault. Someone else howled, and then it stopped, because a mouth that was half tentacles and half hooked teeth had closed and ripped its target in half, grinding the remains down a gullet lined with backwards curving blades. Now there were more shouts and shooting, not aimed at the tower this time. Idris was carried along helplessly, linked to the monster he'd found. He moved from victim to victim, as his champion took one horrifyingly long stride after another, hunting this intriguing new prey. He didn't even know the nature of this beast. His connection was from the inside to inside. He just caught flashes of the various horrifying parts of it, without grasping its doubtless equally horrifying whole. Solis had her back to the wall, waiting for the next opponent. But they'd spotted something else to worry about. Chris caught sight of it first and recoiled from the opening. Later, she'd tell Idris about something with a sack of a body, suspended on too many tall skeletal legs, stilting along as though jerked with strings. It was high up in the canopy, its leg span stretching between the trees. And it was plucking up human shapes and shearing them apart, then picking over what was left, as though trying to read a future in the entrails. "The Joan!" Solis shouted suddenly, and Idris, sightless within the ruin, was nonetheless aware of the new intruder in the sky. He felt the biosphere bend towards it, a great roaring chorus of EM washout, only to meet the ship's gravitic shielding.
Ollie was flying the vessel without instruments, without anything. She had the hatch open, he realized in horror. Their would-be savior was sitting in her scorpion frame at the hatch, looking out, wired into the pilot station, flying the whole circus by wire and guesswork. And she couldn't see them, buried as they were in the jungle. But she would have a comms channel open, he knew. He'd heard her signalling the dig site, hoping to cut through to reach them. Perhaps she even received brief moments of Rebellin swearing at her, telling her that her crew wasn't at the dig, that they'd...
I don't know what's going on out there, but the mercs won't hold off forever, Solace said. We need to signal the Joan and simply hope she can get low enough for us to get aboard.
We need to signal. That's why we came to a signalling station. At this point, the thoughts were just sliding about his head like unsecured junk on a ship's deck. He had no idea what he'd known before coming here, or what he knew now. Communion with the outside world, with the jungle, was eating up all his mental capacity. A broken, millions of years old signalling station, the bulk of it buried beneath him. Its intricate shell-like structure extended into the earth for half a kilometre. And it wasn't dead, because originator tech couldn't die. Every part of it cast a shadow outside the real. Even the little trinkets and rods the hegemony carted about and used to claim whole planets. The very construction and substance of this ancient tech pointed to its function and meaning. There was a world locked away inside this stuff that nobody had ever guessed at.
This is a signalling station. So, signal!
It was such a trivial use of what he'd found, but it was the only thing he actually needed from it. And like any unknowable demon power, it was best not to ask for too much.
Be careful what you wish for.
He signalled Ollie, flagging their location in the clearest way he possibly could. That was all he did. The forest exulted in that moment, for 100 metres in every direction. Every monster, tree and buzzing thing, shrieking, howling and trumpeting. But that was incidental. The whole EM babble around them became one single message, for just that second. A means to an end, burning their location into the Jones flight computer. The last remaining Voyenne took potshots at the Joan when she came lurching down, veering and hovering clear of the trees, while Ollie lowered a chain-link ladder. Solace returned fire, burning the last of Mr. Punch's ammo. She stayed groundside until Chris and Trine had scrambled up the ladder. Then she threw Idris over her shoulder and put a foot on the ladder so Ollie could retract it. Idris, sure as hell, wasn't in any position to climb up on his own. Chris.
So,
Ollie yelled as her frame fought with the closing hatch.
Idris, good to take over for me.
Chris risked a look at the pilot and saw that his skin was waxy, his face wild-eyed, as if he was on a really bad trip.
I don't think Idris is going to be doing anything useful for a while. Okay, fine.
Ollie shouldered past her and Solace and set her frame to crouch in the centre of the passenger compartment. It took up most of the available space.
I'll just keep doing his job as well as mine, shall I?
That's not fair, Solace objected.
Didn't ask your opinion.
Ollie looked wiped out herself. Her scorpion was physically wired to the pilot's console with heavily insulated cables, and the inside of the dark Joan fairly crackled with electromagnetic fields. Chris guessed that she'd jury-rigged the packet runner's gravitic engine to run interference with Jericho's natural EM field,
but she'd still had to somehow keep basic ship operations going. It obviously wasn't exactly a barrel of laughs keeping on top of it.
Bloody patho-tech doesn't help. You don't make it to be monkeyed with, Ollie added, sending Solace another filthy look.
The Partheni didn't rise to it.
This your hiver friend, are they? And hello to you too, Trine said.
They were looking woefully at their damaged leg, which was bent at an awkward-looking angle.
May I at least assume your vessel has an adequate workshop?
Medvig's tools will be good enough for you, Ollie said curtly.
Then the Joan had cut free from Jericho's atmosphere, and they were heading for the beacon of the Vulture God.
Kit'll be panicking, the specialist predicted. Been out of all contact for way too long. Vulture, this is Joan. We're coming in.
The last faint vestiges of the upper atmosphere burned about them as Ollie accelerated the packet runner to a respectable speed, clipping around the planet's curvature. Chris glanced at the nav console and decoded the readouts there.
We're not going to the elevator hub.
Look, we were getting some attention there, Ollie told her. And then there was the stuff Kit scavved from the Raptorid's comms. We could have sat tight and hoped the Jenny Kite ID would cover us. But who knows whether that Magdan turd hired someone with two good eyes and half a brain. So we reckon we wouldn't want to fuck about with permits when time came to scoot. Didn't know who might be beating on the hatch, see right?
Right, Chris agreed.
Vulture, this is Joan. Kit, tell me something useful.
Ollie let herself sag back in the frame, flying the ship with her eyes closed, now her sensors and instruments were clear of interference.
If it's dodged round the planet, the EM will mess with our signal, Solace suggested.
Yeah, maybe.
The specialist sounded unconvinced.
Kit, you crab bastard, speak to me!
You can't say that, Chris told her, knee-jerk.
He doesn't care.
You don't know that, and just don't. And knock off the patho stuff while you're at it. Ollie stared at her, obviously working up to an acidic comment. Then, just as visibly, she backed down.
Fine. Can I just call him a honey bastard then? Oh, God damn!
They'd picked up the Vulture. Hunched over it, like a predatory bat, was the sleek, double-pronged shape of the Raptorid. They could see that it was clamped to the salvage vessel, and there was an umbilical connecting the two.
We have comms contact, Ollie noted tonelessly. Turd wagons hailing us.
Open it up, Chris suggested. Give it to me. I'll talk.
Give it nothing until we've heard from Kit.
I know.
She stepped over the part-folded limbs of the Scorpion and dropped into the pilot's seat. After the chase and fight through that carnivorous forest, she didn't need any of this.
Good day to you, crew of the Vulture God. I assume we don't need to bother with your false alias.
It's a real alias, Chris said. Just a false name.
Pedantry wasn't going to win her any diplomacy awards, but she wasn't in the mood for niceties.
Identify yourself.
I think you recognize my Raptorid.
She recognized the voice now, too, though she wouldn't give the Boyarin the satisfaction of showing it.
And you are the attorney. I remember you. We were having such a pleasant exchange before your warrior dyke broke in. You have the honor of speaking to the Boyarin Paitochevo Oscaro. I, on the other hand, am unfortunate enough to be addressing a crew of wanted criminals.
He doesn't half like the sound of his own voice, Chris thought.
Now, I'm going to suggest that you divert course and come dock with me, Madame Attorney. Bring your int client too. Otherwise, your carrion bird is going to take a long dive down the gravity well.
I'm not entering any manner of negotiations until we've spoken to our crew on the Vulture, Chris said. If you think the ship is leverage enough, think again.
There was a pause, then Ascaro broadcast on an open channel.
Vulture, you may speak.
They received a frenzied babble of scritching and scraping through the comms, together with a great dump of text and images. That certainly looked like Kittering's handiwork. Ollie sorted through it quickly, decoding a long complaint to find the hidden details Kit had secreted within the message. It was an old Hanny game.
Two guys with him. Hauled him over and locked weapons on him before he could do anything. He's not exactly a pilot, poor bastard. Still alive, though.
So, what do we do? Chris asked. I don't see Solace fighting her way over to the Raptorid and ending the lot of them.
Idris?
She looked back to see the intermediary sitting with his back to the hull, looking ill.
Anyone we can hail? He croaked.
No friends hereabouts, Ollie said.
We could fight. I'm full on ammunition now, Solace said quietly. We suit up, in case we're hit. I shoot their hull full of holes. Take out some key systems.
That's how you'd do it in the Parthenon, is it? Chris asked her frankly.
In the Parthenon, I'd have at least three others with the same kit and training as me. And then, yes, we'd go in and do exactly that, with full confidence. Right now, with just me, maybe not ideal. But the man wants to enslave Idris, and he's hardly going to let the rest of us go, given the trouble we've caused him. You have other ideas?
Yes, Chris insisted. There's always other options. Let's give talking a chance. The Boyarin likes to talk. And if they take Idris intact, and we leave this alive too, we can spring him sometime. We work out a rendezvous. Idris can take whatever damn ship they put him on there, and we'll have pirates waiting. We know some pirates.
She faced up to Solace's raised eyebrow.
Well, we do. Alive is better, is all I'm saying. Give me a chance to talk to them.
We talk. We've lost our best chance of fighting it out, Solace said, but in a tone that said she was knuckling under.
Raptorid, we are coming in,
Ollie reported in venomous tones.
Of course you are,
Ascaro said, vastly pleased with himself.
I will hand you over to one of my people while I take care of the bigger picture. Small people for small matters, right?
The specialist's face looked like thunder. Idris? Chris asked. He looked at her without much expression. Pick a system, Solace encouraged him. I'll have a team there on standby for as long as it takes. The moment they give you free access to a ship's controls...
And then I'm yours rather than theirs, he murmured.
Solace looked away. Chris searched for anger, frustration, even guilt on her face. She found none of it. Instead, there was an unexpected misery.
By that point, I don't think I could ask my people to go to those lengths, including attacking a colonial ship, to then come away with nothing.
But isn't the Parthenon better? Better us than the Magdan, surely.
We'll go get him, Ollie said bluntly. Us. We might use pirates, crooks, whatever. But we wouldn't be starting a fucking war.
Solace, old comrade in arms, Trine put in. I am less than enthused by these developments.
As for you, Ollie started.
But then Chris barked out, Hold!
Who's this?
She'd been keeping an eye on the pilot's board, and the Joan had some eager early warning systems.
What now?
Ollie turned her attention to the piloting feed and caught up.
Someone else is out there. Some other ship.
Friends, I don't suppose,
Trine asked hopefully.
You don't suppose correct. We got no fucking friends round here, Ollie told them. They're hailing the Raptorid. Oh, bless your skittering little feet, Kit. He's still acting to their deck, even though they're looking over his shoulder. He's sending us the traffic. Listen up.
Raptorid, came a thin, slightly nasal accent. Chris reckoned it came from somewhere central and settled in the colonies.
This is Morden's Hammer, requesting an address with the respected Boyarin Oscaro of Fifiacello.
Idris jolted to his feet, hard enough to crack his head on the curved side of the hull.
That's got to be a very poor joke, he got out.
Isn't Mordant? Chris started uncertainly.
They're saying they're the secret police, he said.
And when that didn't seem to make much sense, even to himself, he added,
the blatant secret police. When Mordant House throws its weight around, they show it in the names of their ships.
Over the comms came the sound of the operator, sounding cagey.
Morden's Hammer, this is Raptorid. The noble Boyarin would ask for your credentials and to what he owes the pleasure of your presence.
Nativist bastard's a little leery when the actual authorities turn up, Ollie muttered. I guess the whole of Hugh doesn't quite belong to them yet, then.
There's some kind of ID coming through.
Looks genuine. Idris?
I'm no expert. If you think it's sound, probably it's sound. Morden House. Oh, damn me.
He looked sick with the thought.
They're here for me.
You somehow failed to mention that the Hugh Spook Squad were after you, ever, Chris noted, guessing that at least half of this was his normal paranoia. Sure enough, he hesitated.
Well,
I mean, it's not like we haven't gotten mixed up in a whole world of other pain recently, she pointed out calmly. Maybe it's not all about you.
Raptorid, this is Agent Havaya Mundi of the Intervention Board. I claim eminent domain of the vessel you are detaining and all of its crew. I appreciate your assistance in holding them, but kindly repatriate any you might have taken aboard and decouple. Your cooperation is noted, and Morden House always remembers.
The words came over without much inflection, all business and no threat, until you read between them.
Oh, he's got our man Oscaro's number, all right.
Hailing us now,
Ollie said, and that same calm voice came to them.
Partheni packet runner Dark Joan, it is my sincere belief that you are not carrying diplomatic personnel or restricted data that places you outside jurisdiction. Therefore, I am requesting that you follow your original course and dock with a vulture god, which I am taking under my control. Please do not deviate from that course.
Chris brought up an image of the Hammer, which was cruising in at some speed. It was a blunt-nosed vessel, with a heavy head and a bulky Taurus body. As close as you could get to being a light fighting ship without painting her up in navy colours. Chris could even see two banks of heavy accelerators ready to shred any ship that didn't fall into line.
How are the Jones shields? Could we survive that? She asked, indicating the weaponry.
For a short period of time, Solis confirmed, but we're massively outclassed here, and the Vulture can't handle that kind of firepower at all.
The Raptorid's backing off, Ollie noted. They don't fancy it either, and they're tougher than we are.
They don't want to be on the Mordant shit list, and neither do we, Chris said hollowly.
We already are. Look at the fucker they sent after us.
Think about what we've been involved in recently. You think Hugh didn't sit up and take notice the moment word came that we'd hauled an architect-touched ship into Lungcrow? Chris demanded. This doesn't have to be our trouble. We just need to be frank and honest, and not assume they're going to screw us.
They are going to screw us, Ollie insisted. But I don't see what we can do other than bend over. Kit's out there, and he's not even a colonial citizen. He's utterly fucked if we just hightail it away.
A glance was exchanged. Ollie to Idris, Idris to Solace, Solace to Chris. Trine's holographic face just gurned through a series of frustrated expressions, looking at all of them at once.
Hammer, this is the Dark Joan. We're coming in, Chris confirmed.
Better than being at the mercy of the Magdans. Maybe. Possibly.